The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Today on a special Rambling About Cars, we have a new BMW 5 Series. We have a very new Aston Martin DB12, like an hour or so ago from our live recording. But you really, really, really want to stick around for a very cool C4 electric Corvette story we have from a very talented writer who basically uncovered this thing after like two decades. It could have changed the EV landscape back in the late 90s, 2000s. You really want to stick around for that. So it's time to roll, podcast time. I am Christopher Smith and Chris Bruce, co-host across the way. Please introduce our special guest to the world.
Yeah, our guest tonight is Kevin Williams. He wrote that fantastic piece about the electric C4 Corvette. And then, yeah, Kevin, go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell the folks about, you know, what it is that you do, what you're into. Yeah, let them know.
Hey, everybody. So, yeah, my name is Kevin Williams. I am an automotive journalist, so I write about cars, just like most everybody else these days, right? I kind of focus on electric cars, but honestly, I just kind of write about anything that's cool. Mm-hmm. I'm always buying and selling vehicles, you know, kind of going the road less than traveled as far as, you know, this industry goes.
Well, let us know, what was the most recent you either bought or sold?
Oh, boy.
This could get dangerous between you and I because I've had a few cars over the years.
I think technically the most recent thing I have is my Prius. So it's a 2009 Toyota Prius that I bought in November.
Okay.
It's funny because now that I've been paid to write about this stuff now, I feel like I don't buy and sell as much as I used to. Because I'm just like never home.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, I take that back. Why am I talking about the Prius? I have a 2015 Chevrolet Volt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought was a really, really neat car. And I was kind of shocked that it had such a short lifespan.
Yeah, I'm working on some stories about that. It's a lot of complicated stuff. But yeah, I got that car for dirt cheap and I've fixed it up and put it back on the road.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
And I've been driving it for at least a month and a half now.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
Cool. And you write, I know your Corvette story that we'll talk about in a bit is with the Drive. Are you writing specifically with the Drive or are there other places that people could find you?
Yeah, I'm pretty much everywhere. So I'm 100% freelance right now. I was at the Drive for a long time, but now I'm kind of dancing with whoever will have me. So I've got some bylines at Road and Track, Auto Guide, the Autopian. I'm there in and out. I've had some stuff at Jalopnik. Basically, any place you see Kevin Williams and it's about cars, it's probably me.
And you're pretty prolific on Twitter too, because that's kind of where I have seen a lot of your.
I guess so. I mean, I don't think I'm that prolific. I just post, right?
Okay. Fair. That's fair.
And for everybody listening out there, we are live. If you want to interact with us, Motor1.com on Facebook, Motor1 on YouTube, Motor1.com on Twitter. You can go there. If you're listening, you're probably there right now. Type in the comments. All of those comments, all of those feeds come right into us in our little digital headquarters right here that we're looking at. You can't see it, but we can see all the comments that are coming in. That means we can also see your conversations going on in those comments. So if you're gonna make it good, make it really good. And we'd love to share all of those. We could pop them up. So join us in the conversation, join us in the ramble. We're gonna have C4 Corvette electric story in a little bit, but we can't ignore the fact that there's a new BMW 5 series and there's a new generation Aston Martin, not a Grand Tourer. a super tour. We'll talk about that in a bit. You want to start with a Beamer first, guys?
I was thinking, let's go alphabetical, the Aston, but okay.
You want to go Aston first?
I just got outvoted. You two both said Beamer, so.
Beamer it is. BMW Beamer 5 is, right. Series. 2020 BMW 5 Series, i5. They're kind of the same car. They look pretty much the same, except obviously one is electric and one isn't. That's an interesting little design feature we can talk about here in a little bit. There's a little bit of I find the dichotomy very fascinating between what BMW is doing versus, say, Mercedes-Benz, where Mercedes, they're really making their EQ series look substantially different from their standard combustion counterparts. BMW is like, why? So to bring that point home a little bit, nearly all of the press photos we received for the new 5 were i5, and BMW was just like, it's the 5, they're all the same, right? They all kind of look the same, but of course we know they're not the same. Bruce, no. What do you got?
Well, no, I just wanted to put a caveat in there, and I think that we should put a little asterisk. They're the same for now. We know BMW has their Neue Klasse platform coming that's going to be purely for EVs. And I wonder if at that point we get more of a differentiation between their EVs and their combustion powered vehicles. We don't know yet. See, but I wonder if whether that's where they'll kind of, you know, stake their flag and say, now we're going to do things differently for EVs. But you're right. For now, you know, if you look at the i7, if you look at the i5, it looks basically like the combustion powered version.
Well, let's share some stats here really quick, because in the United States, it's launching the 5 Series, just launching with the 530 and the 540, I think, for right now. No sign of a V8 yet, but the i30, you have the, I got to change my sheets of paper here. I have too many notes in front of me. The i30, you have it's the 2-liter turbo 4, familiar engine there, making 255 horsepower now. The 540, you get the 3-liter 6, that's making 375 horsepower, 384 pound-feet of torque. That's a mild hybrid setup. That'll do 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds, which, I mean, that's certainly not bad for a non-performance model. i5, the electric, is where you get a little bit more punch for right now, because that's available in eDrive 40. That's your entry-level i5. Single motor, 335 horsepower, 295 pound-feet of torque. And if you want to go a little bit hotter, you get the i5 M60. That's got the dual motor setup, 590 horsepower, 549 pound-feet of torque. That'll do 0 to 60 in 3.7 seconds. They both have the same battery pack, and that's an 84.3 kilowatt-hour battery pack. Obviously, in the eDrive 40, you're going to get a little more range, 295 miles. M60, range drops to 256 miles, but you're doing it a lot quicker.
Yeah, Kevin, I'd kind of like to hear your opinion about this stuff, because since you are, you're worried about that, you're a bit of an EV guy. I don't think I'm putting words in your mouth by saying that. So what do you think of, you know, the i5 and then also just the new 5 Series in general?
Well, for starters, I'm actually really surprised at how much I like the 5 Series, like design-wise, because I feel like BMW kind of has their thumbs up their ass. Like no, really, though. They, like, introduce these ugly-ass cars and then be mad when people say, hey, this thing is ugly. You know?
Are you referring to a particular BMW that you want to mention?
All of them. It's true though. Like, they remember when they had that stupid ad campaign with the iX or i10 or whatever, where iX. Where how they had that campaign about how, like, we're just, like, too stupid to get how cool that car is. It blew up in their face because it was a whole campaign about how, like, of them saying these hate comments and, like, talking about how, oh, we know what we're doing.
It was like, a little condescending.
It was very condescending. It's super condescending.
It's like, oh, you just don't get it.
Like, no, people are allowed to think your car is ugly.
Yes, they
sorry.
Are.
And well, I'm really shocked at how much I like this design, because I don't really think any modern BMW is all that interesting looking. Like, I just feel like there's a lot of lines and angles that hide like proportions that are not very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
I don't know. This is really pleasing to me, and I'm very surprised. It's like a little new Accord at the back, which I'm kind of shocked about.
You're not the first person we've heard say that.
But okay,
you're not the first person we've heard say that. The chin is a little kind of chunky, a little squared still.
Yeah.
BMW actually said, we have an article on Motor One where their designers, I think, we got some quotes. We had some people over at the launch. And they kind of pointed out what you were just talking about. They said, we weren't making our styling decisions on the 5 Series because of all the negative feedback for those. We just wanted to basically differentiate this from the other vehicles, you know, like the 7 Series, the i7. Where those people, those buyers are a little more expressive. And it's like, I mean, that's what they're saying. Do I buy that personally? I don't know if I do.
Yeah, I don't know if I do.
But I mean, it's definitely, I mean, you could definitely say this is relatively conservative, I think, is a fair way to say this, versus the outgoing 5.
Yeah. Driving wise, we'll just have to see, because I remember driving, I was at the BMW Test Fest back in November, mm-hmm. and I drove the i7, and I was like, this car is kind of mid, you know?
Like, it's funny you mentioned that. Our boss, Seth Miersma, has had Smith. Did he have an i7 or is just the 7 Series this week? I forget.
I think he had the 7 Series. I don't think it was the i. I think it was the 7
Regardless,
Series.
Regardless, he liked the tech. Like, so he has 2 little kids, so he picked them up mm-hmm. from daycare and was showing cartoons on that massive screen in the back.
It is cool. It's a cool screen. It's definitely cool.
He said he was the star of the
daycare.
The daycare pickup, but he said as a driving it though, he wasn't necessarily in love. So
yeah, that which is kind of sad, because like that's, I mean, what do you buy a BMW for, right? Like I think I wrote for Road and Track that it was kind of soft, kind of forgettable. Like at least the i7 made felt like an electric car that was only good in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. Like if you don't pay attention to any other things, like if you don't pay attention to the Lucid Air or even the Model S or EQS, you'll think that the i7 is great. But the second you look at like, you know, just one of its competitors, you realize, wow, the i7's kind of, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm hoping, I don't know. I'm keeping hope alive with the i5 though. Cause I remember, I've driven the iX, and mm-hmm. one of the things I liked about the iX is that even though it was super ugly, I just think it's really wild how like that car drives really nice.
That's
one thing that we don't talk about, and I think that's one thing that BMW is really really messed up, because that car is actually really really sharp to drive. So I'm hoping they can keep some of that energy for the new i5. I think they will, because I know I actually wrote some stuff for the 5 Series release today, mm-hmm. and It seems like BMW is making the i5, like the top trims i5s, the flagship of that model line. Because mm-hmm. since there's no V8 anymore.
Right.
So we'll see. I think they know they have big shoes to fill. So I'm hoping they stepped up to the task. But also, I don't know. Well, I remain cautiously optimistic. It could be horrible. It could be great.
I think a lot of people are there too.
That's definitely the case. Smith, I wanted to add something from what you were saying. You went through the powertrains. I did want to go through just dimensionally how the new 5 Series is different.
Because it is bigger, and it's, I mean, it's noteworthy, I think, you know, its increases. It doesn't sound big on paper, but...
Right. So it's 3.4 inches longer overall. Width is up 1.3 inches. And then if you get the i5 in order to accommodate, you know, the battery pack, it sits 1.4 inches higher than your standard 5 Series.
Sound like much, but and what I need to do probably next week, because after the podcast, I'm on vacation for a little while.
You're about to be on vacation, yeah.
Maybe I should bump this over to some of the other guys. I think it was like, oh man, if I think it was 2 years ago, it was like 5.
Probably.
But when we got the new generation 3 Series, and I did that comparison, because the 3 Series, you know, it had gotten bigger, and it's like, well, wait a minute. And I looked up the stats for like the 5 Series generation from the early 2000s, like the late 90s, early 2000s.
Is that an E60?
No, I think it's earlier than that. But the new 3 series was the same size as that generation 5 series. And I'm wondering now how close this 5 series is going to be to like a 97 series. I'd have to look up those stats.
Yeah, I bet it's close.
Yeah, that's how things go, right? Everything gets a little bit bigger over time.
We should also mention that there's no short wheelbase 7 series anymore.
Correct. Yeah.
So that I feel like maybe they're trying to, you know, straddle that gap of like 2 buyers who didn't want the extra wheelbase of the old car, right?
but let's take a moment here and talk a little bit about the tech inside, because it's kind of evolutionary,
Smith,
outside.
I'm going to interrupt you for just a second. Yeah. So the 5 series that existed from the 2004 to 2010 model years, I was right. That is the
E60. Six. Okay. E39. Okay.
So E39 is the one before that.
Group FBC jumping into our chat. What a long time rambler here. Thanks for jumping in. E39. It was like right on this frontal part of my brain between, you know, right in the spot that usually hurts when you eat ice cream too fast. So perhaps that's why it wasn't coming up right away.
It's all just nerdy car crap, though, because like Mercedes with their W numbers, or going through like RX-7s with, the first RX-7s, the SA22C, and then it became the, like, it's just nerdy car crap that we talk about.
But it feels right. I like to say E39. I like to say E24. I don't want a 6 series. I want an E24 6 series.
I don't have the memory to remember those chassis codes.
The E24, that's the like the 635 from the 80s with a shark nose 2-door, big windows. Okay. Yeah. I have me one of those all day long. We should probably let's touch a little bit on the interior and then move on.
I interrupted you.
That's fine, because we've got the glass makeover. What are some of the dimensions here? I thought I had them written down. Vamp for me, because I've got a big list of stats here that I was frantically writing down.
I believe it's what, 12.9 inches for the instrument cluster and like 14.5.
Yeah, that sounds right for the center.
For the instrument, I think those are the right numbers. If you have the post pulled up,
it's 12.3 and 14.5.
That was close.
What stood out to me is just their new driver assist tech, where you can basically tell the car to change lanes with your eyes. I'm not making that up. It's part of the optional driving assistant professional system, which is part of
to my left.
Well, it only works when the car prompts you, or you recommend, hey, a lane change might be necessary. It will apparently track your eyes, and you can look, you know, at certain mirrors, and then it will execute the lane change, which
kind of a neat
trick. But of course, you know, our colleague that wrote our debut post, Adrian, made the astute comment. It's like, great, here's another reason for BMW drivers to not use their turn signal stock. So
it seems like a solution to a problem nobody had, but
I guess
it's cool, right?
Yeah,
I mean, automatic lane changing systems exist now. You just you know, with cars that have them, you just press the stock,
and I hate all of them.
It changes lanes.
And this one, you just it will only supposedly work when it prompts you. But that's a feature I would like to try out. I'm pretty curious about that. What do you think, Ramblers? Jump into the chat here and let us know. Do you want to change lanes with your car just by looking in that direction? I mean,
Kevin is clearly unconvinced, and I want to know why he's unconvinced.
I just think about all the automatic lane changes that I've used, like was it Hyundai Highway Assist? That's on the it's on the Kia Niro, and it's on some of the Hyundai electric vehicles, and it's just it's too slow. Like, you have to the car. It sees a space and it asks you, and you're like, oh yes, I would like this space, versus me just grabbing the wheel and moving the car where it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
That reminds me, I was on a drive event. Oh, this had to have been like maybe 10 or 15 years ago, a long time now. where the various like parking assist systems were just becoming a thing. It was like, check this out. You can get out, or you can sit here and push a button and it will parallel park for you. And I was there, and there were a bunch of other journalists there, and we were trying to get it to work, and it just wasn't fine-tuned at all. And it was like a minute, and it's like, meanwhile, if you're in Chicago, somebody has now shot you because you're sitting here for a minute blocking the road waiting for you to parallel park. And it's just like, but the systems have evolved over time where they're quick, they work a lot better. So I mean, maybe this is a thing over time, right?
Yeah, maybe, but you know, the first implementation of these systems is always wonky because mm-hmm. they just kind of have to be. Like, you don't get it right the first time generally. And so, yeah, I wonder about this. I also wonder, like, in the future when, you know, 10 years from now and like the mirrors are dirty or something like that, and you know, the second or third buyer buys this vehicle and they're looking over and trying to get the lane to change, and the car's like, I don't know what you want me to do. I'm just a car.
Yeah. And I mean, and if it's using the side mirrors, I mean, if you're in an accident or something, now you have more calibration to go through for what might be a simple, it's double-edged sword. The technology is cool. It can be functional, but I guess there can be a bad side. I'm curious to try it. I guess that's where I'm at.
Same. I would love to try it. But, you know, I don't know how you guys drive, but for the car I have, it's essentially like a pinky finger. Like, I'm driving, I'm changing lanes, it's a pinky finger down or a pinky... Like, I...
Yeah, but Kevin, maybe you can speak to me on this one. I thought the whole notion of just one pedal driving was ridiculous. It's like, no, how hard is it to step on the brake? And then once I had some seat time behind EVs, where we could crank up the regen, it's like, this is really nice. I can just take my foot off, roll up to the stop sign, and just roll right up. The brake lights come on. So it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I think it's one of those things we'll just have to wait and see.
We'll have to
because I think about like GM Super Cruise. I had it on a Bolt EUV presser that I had that I hated. I just was like, this is stupid. I turned it off after about an hour.
Because you know, we've only kind of talked to our editors and stuff about it, so we have a limited experience. So what didn't you like about it, or what did you like about it, or vice versa?
So with the Bolt EUV, because it has an older, I feel like the computer that processes the Super Cruise in the Bolt mm-hmm. EUV is inferior to the ones that you get in the Cadillacs or even the big trucks.
Right. It hasn't gotten some of the upgrades, right? Like it doesn't do the over-the-air stuff, I think.
Well, if it can, it's just like it can't lane change.
Oh, okay.
So it's basically like glorified adaptive cruise. But when I was towing, I did a towing test from here in Columbus, Ohio, way out to DC. So it was like a 7-hour drive.
Wait, you're in Columbus?
Yeah, I'm in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, I'm in Hilliard.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, I'm in Franklin then.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We are. Imagine that.
Very close to each other.
Yeah, we're super close.
For some reason, I thought you were in LA.
Oh God, no, no. I'm in Columbus.
Okay.
Wow. Cool. I'm like right downtown. Wow.
Yeah, interesting. We should meet up sometime.
Exactly. Yeah, so anyways, yeah. I had a Silverado presser and I was towing, and it made towing so much easier because I hate towing. Just like the way it could, like, you know, hold itself in lane, adjust for sway, kind of navigate itself. It was really kind of a set it and forget it thing. Like, you just literally put the cruise control on and let the truck do whatever. But I mean, I don't know. In the Bolt EUV, it just seemed like it was not something. It really wasn't adding to the experience, you know.
Gotcha.
Interesting. Well, let's cap off BMW just by saying they did give us pricing already. You're going to start at $57,900 for the 530i. It goes up to $60,200 if you want that with X drive, with all wheel drive. $540 is X drive already, $64,900. And I found this pretty interesting. The i5 starts at $66,800. So there's really not a huge gap between combustion and electric here. The M60 does get a little bit pricey. It goes up to $84,100. That does include destination fees. But, I mean, you can pick up an X-Drive 540 for $64,900, or you can jump up to the i5 E-Drive for just a little bit more.
I'm so skewed. That sounds so cheap to me.
I know. It's just like first reaction is like, oh, that's not so bad. And then it's like
reasonable, right?
It's like, well, I'm buying generic milk because I don't want to pay the extra for like the regular brand milk. So
right.
Smith, what's generic milk?
Right.
You know, like the regular brand, you know, like the store brand instead of lactaid, because I love milk, but I don't do good with lactose. Lactaid's like a buck more, man. And I can get like Farmer's Choice.
Yeah, but it sounds like then you're going to have some rumblies in your tumblies. And
the dollar might
be worth it.
I'm saving. Well, no, it all comes out just fine. I'm saving a buck.
It all comes out fine. Good.
So we do ramble a little bit on this program, don't we?
I mean,
of course we do.
Right.
Well, let's talk about Aston Martin DB12. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Let me just offer an advisement to all of the ramblers out there listening, whether you're live, which by the way, Motor1.com on Facebook, Motor1.com Twitter, Motor1 YouTube, you can comment, or you can catch us on Motor1 YouTube page after the fact. And we're streaming on Fridays on Spotify, all that stuff. If you would just want to go audio only, we are only like an hour and a half away from when the DB12 debuted. So this fresh. This is fresh news to all of
everyone.
Us here. So we're kind of learning along with everybody else. We'll try to give you the information as best as we can, or failing that, we'll just try to crack some really good jokes.
Exactly. So here's something I thought was interesting, and this it's tangentially has to do with the vehicle. I was surprised they called this the DB12 because, to my knowledge, this is the first production Aston Martin DB model with an even numbered name since the DB6, right? Because they did DB7, they did DB9, they did DB11, and then James Bond was it Spectre? I don't remember which James Bond, but he got the DB10, quote unquote, which was kind of the preview for the DB11. So
yeah,
this is the first one with an even number since the DB6, I think.
I didn't get much because I did. I mean, of course, I read our article on Motor One, and I did peruse the press release. I didn't have time to spend a lot of time in the press release, but I didn't catch anything from Aston Martin on that. And that's something we should probably reach out on, because I would like to know that's an astute point. You know, why DB12 instead of DB13? I know some of the early criticism has come back. Well, it's still kind of like just a DB11 facelift. Right. But I mean, they're calling it the DB12. There's quite a bit different about it.
It's got a hell of a lot more power.
It's got a lot more power. For right now, at least, there's still the 4-liter twin turbo V8 from AMG, but it's up to 671 horsepower, 590 pound feet of torque.
Right. And to put that into perspective, in the post refresh DB11, it was 528 horsepower. So
this actually has more power than the outgoing V12 model.
Exactly. Yeah. So they gave it a lot more power.
Yep. That means 0 to 60, 3.5 seconds, 202 miles an hour top speed. This is the first DB to have an electric rear differential. They say it can go from locked to open in just milliseconds. That combines with their super intensive electronic stability controls and all of that to allegedly make it handle amazing. I say that because Aston Martin, you're gonna just have to send me one to drive for a while before I'll confirm this stuff. And hit me up, give me a call, give me a text. We can make it happen.
Real quick, I want to call this out, Tim Carlson. Tim, I think this is your first comment on the show, so thank you so much for commenting.
Thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Thanks for commenting. And so I will read it out to anyone who's listening the audio version. Tim Carlson said, DB12 is a fantastic upgrade compared to the DB11. The V12 will be missed, but the new V8 is fantastic.
Well, I mean, do we think a V12 will show up eventually?
I think they've said it won't, well, right? Because didn't they do the Vantage V12 as kind of like the last of the line?
Yeah, but I remember talking, I did a press event with Aston Martin back for DBX 707, and the hint there was, well, we're not quite done with the V12 yet. So,
okay.
So I mean, DBX 707, that was a little while ago. So, I mean, maybe they were talking about Vantage. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. I don't know that I would count the V12 out just yet.
Okay. Fair.
But, I mean, you have 671 horse from this, so.
Which is plenty. Like, it's hard to be like, oh, I need more power than.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily about the power. It's the V12 Aston. It's the sound. It's the experience. That's true. It makes a difference.
I wonder how this will compare to the new Maserati Gran Turismo.
Oh, the MC20? Oh, no, the new Gran Turismo. I'm sorry.
Gran Turismo.
Sorry.
Because I'm thinking about it, I think the Maserati, the Folklore, might be kind of neck and neck with this, like price and performance wise. Or is that a little too less of a car? I can't tell.
Well, no, I don't know. I mean, we don't have any pricing for the DB12, so
right. We don't have. But I don't know. We'll see. It seems like Maserati is finally trying to play ball again. So.
For sure. I think they are. I think it would be a good comparison, even if the price point isn't quite, even if it doesn't line up that well.
Right.
And one thing, let me talk a little bit about the styling here, since we're looking at the outside, because
sure thing.
A lot of people, some of the early comments, some of the early feedback, and even when we were just featuring various spy shots of prototypes. Is it wrong in saying this feels maybe a little conservative on the outside for what Aston Martin is calling not a grand touring vehicle, because grand is not enough. This was part of their campaign. They call this a super tour, which I mean, it's still a GT car, but I feel like they're putting a lot, are they putting a lot into it? And then, okay, we have this new super tour that, in a lot of ways, looks like the DB11. I mean,
I think the Super Tour name is dumb, but also look at Aston Martin's whole history going back to the 50s, basically. You've never really seen a really ostentatious design from Aston. They've always been kind of, very kind of like British stiff upper lip, like understated in a way, understated yet powerful in a way. So, I don't necessarily agree with you there.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. Ted Adam Green joining us here says it's a beautiful Aston. Thank you very much, Ted. It's good to hear from you. Group FEC externally, it's not much of a change. Differences are all inside and under the skin. That's very true. And that's something we should touch on pretty quick before we move on to electric Corvette.
Well, wait, I want to hear Kevin's opinion about the looks.
I mean, to me, Aston Martin has been giving us the same car since like 2005. I mean, it's not bad. It's a good looking car, but I have no strong opinions about the styling. I think it looks good.
I don't think you're completely wrong there at all. Yeah. I find a lot of just familiarity with the Aston Martin styling. This one, obviously, I mean, the grille is bigger. We should call out some of the differences. The grille is bigger. It has more like teardrop shaped headlights. There's Valhalla influence that we saw. We were able to see that in the prototypes. Mm-hmm. From the back, it still looks a lot like the DB11.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's a lot like the DB11. It's not a bad style. I found their buildup, at least when it comes to the exterior, grand is not enough. Well, okay, but it still kind of looks a lot like it did. But hey, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Let's talk about the interior.
I mean, it's gorgeous here. Let me skip to some photos of that while if you guys can vamp for me for just
talk
a
about the interior. I can certainly vamp a little bit, Bruce.
There we go.
It's got a 10.25 inch screen. I love the way they integrate it. We're seeing so many vehicles now where you've got like the big portrait display or the big landscape display that kind of sits up. The idea of integrating a screen into the vehicle is kind of gone away. but they have it here, and it feels like it's integrated more into that center console, even though the center console is really just stretching right up to the middle of the dash there. So I really like that layout.
And also, if you notice, lots of physical buttons. It's clear that whoever Austin Martin, whoever they think their customers are, they want those physical buttons. And I kind of have to agree with them. After I've owned cars with screens with a lot of like digital buttons, and I've owned physical buttons. I'm gonna go for something I can actually touch every day of the week, because it just it falls to your fingers better. You can just, it's tactile. I don't know how to describe it. Kevin, go ahead.
I think that's the same. Somebody mentioned on a Instagram post I saw earlier. I think that's the same generic JLR screen.
Oh, is it?
I pulled up a base Defender because I was just in a base Defender because I have a friend who has one. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, that looks real familiar, which is fine, I guess, right? Like, nobody cares.
Yeah. Well, Aston Martin, they do make it a point to say that the infotainment system is their own design, you know, the plug and play stuff behind it. And it's their first in-house infotainment system. Does have Apple CarPlay, Android Auto. So GM, if you're listening, just tossing that out there. I mean, it's a popular feature. Let's include it. I don't really get GM's decision on that, but that's another podcast, folks. That's another podcast. It's got more end. It's got more power for the engine. Suspension is updated. Next gen adaptive sport dampers, stiffer sway bars. The body is more rigid. 3 drive modes: GT, Sport, Sport Plus. What else we got here? 15.7 inch front brakes, 21 inch wheels.
I just wanted to mention, Grupa FBC said that's the right amount of physical buttons. They're needed for regular functions. Mm-hmm. And I tried to zoom into this photo here, and you can see things like temperature, volume, and then temperature for the passenger side, fan speed. You can see it's for the ventilated seats or the seat heating functions. It's I got to agree with him. It's stuff that you want to be a physical button for, because dealing with a screen is just going to be annoying. It's things like temperatures and volume and fan. It's just, I completely agree with him.
And once you are familiar with the feel and the location, I mean, muscle memory takes over at that point.
Yeah.
Where if you're using a touchscreen, the touchscreen always feels the same. And you know what? It's hard to identify a specific location. You're going to have to look over at the screen. The whole point of the buttons, and if you look back, especially on older vehicles, especially cars from the 90s with their cruise control systems on the steering wheel, one will have like a little raised round section, and then another button will have a little divot in it, so you can just go, so you know exactly when you feel it, okay, this is set, this is decel, you know, whatever, things like that, so you don't have to take your eyes off the road. I'm a fan of these controls. It's a gorgeous interior. I know some of our Ramblers are commenting that it looks fantastic inside. It looks fantastic inside. And despite what I was saying earlier about the exterior, I mean, I think the exterior looks great on the outside. I was just expecting something, I guess, a little bit more dramatic.
Fair.
And there's no pricing available yet. It'll be available. It'll go on sale later this year. I think they're saying Q3 2023, so pricing will be available as we get closer to that. But gentlemen, any last thoughts here on the new DB12?
Looks great.
it does. It looks fantastic. It's, you know, a car I'm never going to be able to afford. So it's, but you know, it's the type of car I would like. I like a Grand Tourer versus like a Puron track focused car. Like I like something that I can actually use on the road, and it can be fast but also comfy. And that's where my preferences lie. So I like it, but I'll never own one.
Yeah. Well, let us know, Ramblers. Email us podcast@motorone.com if you're not catching us live. Of course, you can also comment at YouTube for the video that goes up. The videos always stay there on Motor One YouTube. You can comment there. We did get an email from Ted Adam Green. Ted, thanks very much. Let's give a quick read on that. And then we got to get to some electric Corvette, because this story, Kevin, you're being way too patient, man. This story is too cool. Bruce, you got Ted's email pulled up here?
I sure do. Yeah. We'll have a little discussion about it. So yeah,
just go through it really quick here.
Yep. And it's taking a hair longer to load. Oh, there we go. Okay.
There you go.
So, hey, Chris and Christopher, for rambling about cars, you all asked for emails, so here is mine from my work email, no less. Let's talk Toyota. Why? Question mark.
Well, why do you want to talk Toyota? What?
Well, there is no more divisive car company at this particular point in history. You can get enthusiasts from your fold that will rave about advancements of the GR models, the new Tacoma, or even the new Prius Prime. Yet, you can also get your pals on the EV side of things that rant about how bad their history with anti-EV ads and their pushing for hybrids, but not all out EVs are. They seem to dislike Toyota as much as they love Tesla and Rivian. Somehow, the previously benign and benevolent no car company's benevolent, Ted. Sorry, I'm going to disagree with you. The previously benign and benevolent car company that made bland and even led the way on the greenish vehicles that neither excited nor offended anyone has become the lightning rod on both sides, and they don't even make Hellcats. Get two guests from each side within the Motor1.com family and ramble away, guys. Thanks so much, Ted Adam Green.
And obviously, this is a response because we were talking about Tacoma last week. I've heard lots of good stuff about the Tacoma. It's an interesting take. You know, there are the enthusiasts that are pretty excited about the GR stuff, except maybe a certain GR86 owner that we just posted about today that... if you go to motor1.com, and I think a lot of other outlets have written about it by now too, 19,000 miles was apparently doing a track event. Something happened to the engine. Toyota said, oh, we're not going to warranty that because you were on a track. You were driving your track proven GR86 on a track. There's two sides to every story. So I mean, don't know exactly what else going on there. But yeah, there are the enthusiasts on that side. I find it interesting that, and Ted, you're correct in that Toyota is getting a little bit of backlash because they don't want to push all the way into EVs, even though they sort of led that field for a while with their development of hybrids. So, Kevin, I'm especially interested to hear what you have to think about all of this.
I mean, their EVs suck.
Ooh, okay.
I mean, what do you want me to say? I mean, like, that's kind of all it is. I mean...
Well, we just He's make right. fun of the BZ4X because of its horrible name that sounds like something out of Star Wars.
It's totally a Stormtrooper's designation.
I told somebody that car seems like it was made with contempt. Like they're just like, okay, here's your electric car. Get out of my face.
Here's your compliance car. Now let us sell you this hybrid. There are questions right now as to whether, okay, are we going a little too fast in the EV direction? Will or should hybrids have a longer lifespan here as we make this transition? I don't know that I can fault Toyota for falling down the side of, let's just stick with hybrids for a little bit longer right now before we go to EVs.
I agree. I think Toyota has a point, but also I think the links that they go to prove that point are a little weird, you know? Because I honestly think their hybrid vehicles are probably some of the best in the biz, but their electric, it's just so wild that their electric vehicles are just not.
I hear everyone who has driven a RAV4 Prime that I have talked to has had nothing but praise for it.
So when you're doing that good there, where's the incentive to really push, you know, really deep into EV territory? And the companies that are, I mean, what are we generally seeing? We're seeing like high five, low six figure EVs for all of these first efforts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you want to hold back a little bit, I hate to turn to Ram on this one, but their whole ad campaign of premature electrification, kind of brilliant, maybe. Because they were getting kind of, I mean, they were getting razzed for a while. Here's the Ford F-150 Lightning electric. Here comes Chevrolet with the Silverado and the electric GMC Sierra. And of course, the GMC Hummer, which is just a bonkers vehicle anyways. And Ram is still pumping out Hemi trucks. But maybe they're smart to just kind of hold back a little bit and I don't know.
Let
this segment kind of evolve a little bit first.
I don't know. They're still pulling out a truck with a 200 kilowatt hour battery. So, I mean, they're just as bad. I don't know.
Could be.
So guys, I read this question ahead of time, and Ted Adam Green, I do not know how old you are, but it makes me, I wonder if you're roughly the same age as me. I'm about to be 37. And the reason I say that is that when I graduated high school in 2004, basically Toyota had two enthusiast vehicles. I'm making sure I pull up the right thing here. They had the Celica, which was on its very last legs, and they had the MR2 Spyder, which was also on its very last legs. And then you go to, let me share this, all throughout, pressed the wrong button, all throughout the post that era, basically up until now, they had no enthusiast driven vehicles. Zero. Literally, I mean, I guess that the Scion FRS, which eventually became the 86, that's kind of your one exception. But I kind of grew up in an era where Toyota was probably at their most successful in terms of selling vehicles. You know, how many Camrys and Corollas and RAV4s and stuff like that did you see on the road? They were hugely successful. But I don't know if you guys remember this. I can't remember which publication said it, but there was a joke for a while that if you bought a Camry, it should come with a dopamine drip that just like hang down from the headliner, because it was such a boring car to drive.
Yeah, but they did what they were supposed to do. They got the job done.
They didn't drain
your bank accounts. So
No. That's not what I'm saying. No, they were boring, but incredibly good at what they did. But if you were a car enthusiast, roughly my age, and during that late 2000s into the 2010s period, there was not a lot to get excited about Toyota.
You get a Scion TC. No.
No.
I went on the press drive for that, and I even had a conversation with some of the engineers. I was like, you're not done with this, right? I mean, this is like an early model. They're like, well, what do you mean? I was like, well, I mean, I like having the roof open, but with the roof open, I can't hear anything because there's like this weird, like reverberation going on inside. And it just, there's a following for them, but.
There is, but, and apparently Ted Adam Green, he said, I'm 55. So he lived
closer to me.
In the 1980s, where there were a ton of exciting Toyotas,
you had a good Supra, Celica All-Track,
MR2, I'm a fan of the Cressida. If I love a good Cressida, like that was a really good time for them. And so I just wonder if there's a part of this too that kind of a generation of enthusiasts kind of ended up forgetting about Toyota because between Honda and Subaru, they kind of ate their lunch amongst people, you know, kids, I'll call them, you know, kids my age who were into cars.
Could be.
Yeah.
And Ted, I mean, great email. Thanks for sending that in. Everybody else out there listening, podcast at Roto1.com. Shoot us your emails, your thoughts on this episode, your thoughts on anything car related. We love to talk about it. But now we are finally, Kevin, thank you so much for being this patient.
Oh, no problem.
There is, it's still in Illinois, correct? As far as you know? There was a C4, which for those that don't understand the terminology, a fourth generation Chevrolet Corvette that was built by Motorola and converted into an electric vehicle in the 90s. And yes, they did such a good job of it that they kind of pissed off GM because they were trying to come out with their impact. You know, they were working with their impact, and then here comes the EV1, and the car was really good. And then Motorola just kind of changed direction and it was forgotten. But you uncovered it, Kevin, in your first article, I think, was 2022 when you uncovered it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just bring us up to speed here on this story.
Oh, yeah. So the story actually starts in 2021.
Okay.
Maybe it was 2022. I can't remember. I'm going to say it was 2020. It was 2022.
Okay.
Or was it? I can't remember. Anyways, so I was, you know, I was going through this thing where this is when Car Bibles was still existing. Mm-hmm. Somebody had sent me a link for a Beijing Jeep that was listed in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that sounds fun. Okay. And
yeah,
it was. It's like, how did this car get here? This would be like a fun little article. And I was just going to, like, you know, write up, oh, look at this little cool, you know, listing. But I'm like, you know what? Why don't I just go to Chicago? It's not that far. It's only a 5-hour drive. And also, I've been looking to get away for a weekend anyways. So I made a trip out of it. Called the guy, he sent an email, and he was like, oh yeah, you can come out and look at it. And the Beijing Jeep was kind of crap. Like, it had clearly not run in years. But okay. I hit it off with the scrapyard's owner, because it was at a car lot that was attached to a junkyard. Mm-hmm. And I hit it off with the guy, and I says, and he's like, oh, I have this one of one Motorola Corvette. That's all he told me. It was a Motorola Corvette.
Motorola Corvette. Okay.
I was like, oh, okay. That sounds like something that's not very interesting.
It's a Corvette with like a big phone, you know, 90s phone.
Exactly. I thought it was going to be some like pace car or something.
Yeah.
Like a one of one pace car. And I was like, oh, that sounds cool. I don't really want to see that. I didn't say that, but
of course.
He had hit it off, and he was showing me his collection and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you want to see the Corvette? And I'm like, okay, whatever. And then he showed me that. And then I realized then and there, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm looking at something way more complicated than what I thought it was. You know, not just a blue and white Corvette with a Motorola logo on it. But yeah, so this guy, he wouldn't really tell me how he got it. But basically, he came into possession of an old prototype. He's in the Chicagoland area. That's where this car still is. Of a one-of-one prototype, fully electric Corvette built by Motorola sometime in the 90s. I think it was like 93 and 94 is when most of the work of this car was done. It's not a 1993 or 94. This is actually an 87 Corvette.
Okay. It looked like the earlier style. I like that they kept the Corvette wheels.
Yeah, they kept a lot of things. It was designed to be as like stealthy and seamless as possible. Like if everything goes correct, I think it actually still has heat.
Okay.
Oh wow.
And AC and even power steering. But there's a lot of work into making sure everything worked. But yeah, the guy who has the Corvette right now, he's the scrapyard owner. And basically, yeah, he got the car and a stack of documents that were kind of moldy and waterlogged and was like, this is what I got. I don't know anything about this car. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to figure it out, because this is very obviously something way more complicated than just, you know, just looking at the quality of how everything was designed and how it all came together. Just like even like, you know, I'm not an engineer, but just like looking at that, that tells me that this was something big done by somebody who had money to, like, you know, design all these systems to go together. It was a lot of care put into this project. And I think it's weird that I couldn't find anything about it online at all.
Wow. So I mean, you, obviously you found stuff out because there's an, you wrote an incredible three-part story at the Drive, which we will have linked in the YouTube description for this episode. And I think I already have it linked at MotorOne.com for people to go read it. There were from what I understand, there was like sort of like maybe there was the initial camp at Motorola. Well, first of all, there was the initial project that was just like a few guys was like, hey, let's see if we can do this. And then it worked. And then there were some car guys at Motorola who were like, well, let's do something bigger.
So
They initially started with a Renault 5 or a Renault Le Car, as we call it.
Yeah, probably. He I think it was a Le Car. He said it was either a Renault or Volkswagen, but I put Renault in the story. So I'm assuming it was a Le Car. Mm-hmm. And it was the, ended up being the head of like Motorola Automotive, not the entire head, but like the head of like the project they were working on, Sanjar Gaim. And he had, this was during the gas crisis of the 70s. I'm going to guess and say it was the second gas crisis. And he says, like, you know, why don't we turn a, let's see if we can do an electric car. Like, would that work? Mm-hmm. So they converted, they said an old cheap economy car to electric. And I was like, huh, this is kind of cool. And he got with another person in Motorola. It was a Ken Gerbitz, who was like, hey, this is kind of cool. Why don't we try and push Motorola towards this way? Because we see, I think this is right around the time when CAFE standards started to become a thing. It's like, you know, we wondered what, I think they were wondering what they thought that, what would things look, they could see the industry going that way in the not so near future, right? And they says, well, why don't we try and push Motorola towards this way? Because at the time, Motorola Automotive was a supplier for a lot of other automotive, you know, OEMs. They would do like power steering systems and other like supercapacitors things. This was like the age of the supercapacitor when they really started to become like a thing for vehicles. And they saw, it's like, hey, this could really be a boon towards, you know, electrifying vehicles. So why don't we try and push things that way? So it ended up working out that they didn't have any money. So they were doing this stuff kind of like off the cuff, just like on the back end, right? Just like on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And they found a team of folks in Arizona who were working on early EV race cars.
Oh, okay.
So there's like, well, why don't we put our weight behind this with our limited funds and our limited, you know, manpower? Why don't we put our weight behind these two guys in Arizona and see what we can come up with? So they grabbed a couple guys and then got a little bit of money. They got a sponsor to get some batteries, and they came up with the EX11. Which was a race car based on an IndyCar chassis. Mm-hmm. And basically that car ended up winning the, I think it was the Arizona Solar and Electric race in 1993.
And that was the one where I think you said General Motors was there. Yeah. With their like whole entourage, with their impact. And it's like,
yep.
we're General Motors, we're going to win this. And like these down. Motorola guys didn't. You know, the Motorola guys just came in and took it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, so that's what the EX11 looked like after a paint job. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that car raced at the Motorola Solar and Electric, or at the Arizona Solar and Electric 500. There were a lot of cars there. I think in the story, I talk about how Toyota was also there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see like the reaction of Toyota versus the reaction of GM. You know, GM was embarrassed, I guess, because they
Toyota was like, come work for us.
Yeah, Toyota wanted to buy it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just, that's one of the reasons why I so wanted to have you on, because the image of, okay, well, first of all, Motorola, what? It's like the company that makes phones, it's like they had a car division.
And
it's
they did.
That's fascinating. And yeah, they pissed off GM in the process. That's even better.
right? Yeah, but yeah, all Motorola Automotive back then was really about, like, you know, they were a supplier for a lot of OEMs. Mm-hmm. Now they're part of Continental.
Okay.
Yeah, they were spun off in 2006, and now they're part of Continental. But yeah, they basically, the whole project was basically we should build a proof of concept to show off what this division can do, and thus sell what we can sell to other OEMs.
And so that, it was less. And that brought us to the Corvette?
Yes. The Corvette was supposed to be a, like, you know, flashy test bed of, look at what our automotive division can do. As far as, like, you know, I think it was motor controllers and powertrain management.
So, Kevin, I want to ask you this question that came in as a comment from Mark Needleman. I'm blown away, stock shifter and clutch pedal on the floor, and they hooked it up to a Doug Nash 4-speed. Was the 4-speed actually it was a 4-speed car?
Correct. It was a 4-plus tool, and it worked.
Huh. That's so wild.
So the automatic overdrives did work, according to the documentation.
And the motor output was engineering. They ultimately got that up to, I think, 400 horsepower.
So with the batteries, so they had the lower powered exceed, like, lead acid batteries. So I think it was at 172.
Okay, which isn't far off from the regular
And they also said that because it was so torquey, it would, like, beat a regular Corvette. Mm-hmm. But I was told that if you were to put they had a second set of batteries that were not from their sponsor, so they couldn't really work with them, and it also didn't show up. It showed up too late. Like, I think the project was canceled before they could get the batteries there.
Okay.
But if they had used the higher powered batteries, they said they would probably do it at least 400 around that area.
And now we're talking kind of in the mid-90s thereabouts, right?
Yeah, this would have been 94.
That 94. So here is Motorola. I mean, I just want to put this in perspective for everybody for a minute. 1994, here's a Corvette with an electric powertrain built by Motorola that has a capability of 400 horsepower with the better batteries, still connected to a manual transmission. And when you saw it driving down the street, it still looked like just a C4 Corvette.
Right.
And I mean, in 94, the Tesla Roadster was what, about 2008, 2009, before you started to see something of this caliber?
Right.
That sounds about right, yeah.
And I mean, it's just, it feels like they were so far ahead of the game on this.
Right.
But that was that maybe some of part of the reason why the program was ultimately canceled? Was there a sense that it's so far ahead, it's like, hey, nobody's going to be dealing with this stuff for years?
Yes. Matter of fact, three different sources I talked to on this story, they basically had been told by Motorola management that nobody would ever buy a hybrid or electric car.
Because like, here comes Toyota.
Like, famous last later. Words. Yeah. Yeah, not even 3 years later, which means likely that the first Prius was probably in development. Sure. when they raced the
they probably started development after that first race.
It was probably way before that, but before it's just that, like, you know, yeah. I'm just thinking, like, you know, obviously people were working on some sort of electrified transportation, mm-hmm. and just to say that nobody would ever buy or manufacture one is just incredibly short-sighted.
Totally. So I wanted to point this out. Not only did you find the vehicle, but like you said, you found kind of these waterlogged, water damaged documents. Yeah. And the one we're looking at here is the safety procedures. And it's not that it's funny, really. It's just, it's fascinating that this is something that got typed up and put out, because it feels so obvious that, you know, that none of this feels like stuff you should have to tell people, especially engineers working on a car, especially use parking brake. But it's fascinating that this is amongst the documents that you found.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely gives the vibe of, like, this was definitely done kind of with not very many people's knowledge. even in right. Motorola. Because yeah. There was actually a first story that went viral in 2022 of me just kind of chronicling, like, this is what I found. And that's kind of how I was able to write the three-parter, mm-hmm. is because I was having a hard time finding the people. But sure. it went viral enough to where actually a lot of the people actually kind of contacted me.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yes.
All that, yeah, that it is was, so cool.
Yeah. But it was definitely kind of a, nobody was really supposed to know about this project. Because when I first looked at the project, I was like, I'm not even sure if this thing was ever supposed to escape Motorola.
Yeah.
Yeah, stuff like this. I mean, at an auto manufacturer, stuff like this usually
gets destroyed.
Gets destroyed, exactly. Or if it's very fortunate, maybe it goes into their archives or something. The whole thing reminds me a little bit of Ford through the 90s with the rise of SVT, because I worked with Ford for a little bit right at the end of the SVT marketing program. And through the 90s, I mean, you had like John Colletti and some of these other guys that really wanted to do some various, you know, legit performance vehicles, not just something with wheels and some stripes and maybe five extra horse. And they had, I guess you would call air cover, with some higher level executives at Ford that they said, hey, if you guys want to run with this, you know, go ahead and do this. I'll find a way to make it happen. So they were able to do that through the 90s. And there were, I mean, you had the SVT Lightning and then the SVT Contour and then the Focus. But they were also looking at a Crown Vic. They were looking at an SVT Ranger. They were looking at an SVT Escort, an SVT Thunderbird. They wanted to SVT all the things.
Right.
And I mean, the Crown Vic sort of came to life with the Mercury Marauder. And the Escort sort of came to life with the ZX2 SR. But when that upper level management, the air cover that they had retired, I think, in the early, either the late 90s or the early 2000s, and then it all just kind of went away. And it feels like that's sort of what happened here. Maybe they had like a champion, and that just then things changed.
Yeah, one of the things that I didn't put in there is that in the piece is that I think one of the heads of the Motorola Automotive Group retired. And he was kind of a car guy, and the people who replaced him were not. And they said, this is kind of a dumb project, so we're just going to kill the whole thing.
We're looking at a picture right now. That's, I mean, one, I love the C4 Corvette. I love the wheels with the red painted inside. You would never look at that and say, oh, that's electric?
That's right. The point I wanted to make, is that if you looked at this car going down the road, you would not know this isn't a stock Corvette. There are no exhausts. Otherwise, that's the difference. Like,
the part that gets me is that they got the weight distribution right, because this car is 800 pounds heavier. This car is 800 pounds heavier than the standard one. Okay. And like, there's nothing about it that looks like it's sagging.
No.
Or
not a bit.
Or like that it rides weird. It probably does ride weird, but like
if you're actually behind, it probably does. I bet you could feel a difference, but looking at it,
it doesn't
just looks like a C4 Corvette.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Motorola, they can the project. The Corvette obviously didn't get destroyed, but what happened to it from there? Because it's still alive, but it seems like it kind of got forgotten.
It definitely got forgotten. And it seems like it's it illustrates how much Motorola did not care about that project or its future, honestly. So it went to Motorola's in-house museum. For starters, the entire project was broken up. Everybody was sent off to do something else. I think one of the main engineers who designed the motor and the motor controller, they said they had him doing electro-hydraulic power steering systems for Opel.
It's at least car related.
Yeah, and he was like not into that. A few other people left. But that went to, I guess, Motorola's in-house museum. And then the museum was downsized, I think, sometime in the 2000s.
Oh.
Because Motorola is just mostly like phones and radio equipment, right? So yeah, they couldn't have a car. So they asked the original project lead who still worked there. He says, hey, do you want this car? And he says, I don't really want it. I already have a Corvette. So the museum curator got it. And it just, that's where it went.
So
it's so sad at how just like easily it just left. Cause I don't, it, from what I gather, the car wasn't even disabled. Cause I don't know if you've seen a GM EV1, mm-hmm. like whenever those make it out of GM, they're in any sort of, you know, the handful of GM EV1s that are around the country, they are disabled.
Right.
Like you cannot put them back on the road. A lot of times they're missing pieces. Like you'll see them riding high in the front because there's like no batteries or no motor. That car was complete when it left.
And I mean, did the curator, I mean, use it at all, or was it just stored?
So this is kind of one of the things that I don't have know. Mm-hmm. I was told that he did drive it around the Chicagoland area for a while. Because it does have Chicago electric plates, because up until fairly recently, if you had an electric car in Illinois, you got special plates, and it has like some of the earliest like electric plates like ever for the state. But after, I don't know how long he drove around for, and that's kind of the part of the story I was never able to get solid answers on, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
So you started, so this was a three-part series. The first part came out in 2022 and the other two parts came out in 2023.
Technically, it's a four-part.
Oh, is there a fourth part? Did I miss that?
Yeah, the first would be 2022 and then the three-parter was
a few weeks ago.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I'm just curious, has anyone like contacted the current owner and said, "Hey, we want this. We want to preserve it," you know?
So unfortunately, the current owner wants to sell it, but he has a really, really high asking price.
Oh.
And he wants like $100,000 for it, which is not for a car that doesn't run.
Sure.
Well, yeah, well, so. I mean, do you know?
Because I have, I can't believe
I'm asking this, but do you know what it needs? I've got a big garage sale happening this weekend and I'm going to have some space.
At the very least, it's going to need batteries.
I need more drink.
Because one of the things I noticed when I first laid eyes on the car back in 2022 is that those batteries are like, they're deep cell, like kind of marine batteries. And they are from 1994 because I looked at the date on them.
They're at the end of their rope. Yeah.
They are done. You cannot use those batteries. Yeah. Other than that, it looked like at least from what I could see, everything looked pretty intact.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest fear is that something would be rotten. You know, you try and put power to it and like, you know, catch on fire.
Yeah, you want to give it a really good look. See,
once over.
I mean, with the core stuff in place, the foundation there. I mean,
and also this is actually one of the engineers has said, like, you know, only thing is a lot of that stuff is bespoke. If it's broken or if it needs fixed, you're on your own.
Yeah.
Although less on your own now, because I'm pretty sure whoever could probably get in contact with, you know, the engineers now, and they'd probably be willing to help them. But also at the same time, it's definitely going to be over some work.
I'm not trying to rip off Indiana Jones here, I promise, but I feel like this belongs in a museum. Like, I feel if there's any vehicle that you could talk about, like, this belongs in a museum.
It's this.
This belongs in a museum.
It would be a good candidate for a museum. Or, I mean, I know Tavarsh is working on that flooded McLaren P1.
I bet you could get this on the road quicker.
absolutely. Probably.
Even with work that's needed to put into it, I mean, the foundation is there. It's like there's already the motor in there. You could, it'd be like a great candidate for like the newer lithium. If it could do 400 horse, did we ever know what the range was on it?
So they actually never tested, but they said it would probably be about 50 miles.
Okay.
With that.
Certainly not a big range, but.
But one of the engineers told me, this is, you know, I did some math, and he says there's about enough space in the Corvette's body to do probably about 60 kilowatts worth of battery if you figure it out how to place it. He says that might be a little tricky to get 60 kilowatts and supply 400 horsepower, but he thinks it's doable.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking 60 kilowatts and something like that is probably more than enough.
I would think
To me, though, this isn't necessary. Like, vehicles deserve to be driven. I believe that.
Right.
But also, this is a case where you just kind of want it to survive. Like, you know, like, it's special enough and it's unique enough. And especially when we talk about things like the new E-Ray. And, you know, we know that far enough down the line, there's probably going to be an electric Corvette, that this is the pebble of that idea that rolled into a giant boulder, that you want something like this to survive.
Well, I just think Needleman comments say maybe the Corvette Museum in Bowling Green. I don't know.
I actually asked some GM Heritage people, and they were kind of like, they didn't say kick rocks, but they were just kind of like, we don't know what that is.
Well, I was about to say, has enough time gone by where GM's ego isn't bruised anymore? And clearly the answer is no.
Is no.
Well, this was a while ago. This was almost a year ago. I had been working on this piece for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a year ago when I asked him. So maybe things are a little bit different now.
Okay.
I don't know. But I just think about that project and think about so many what ifs. You know, arguably the Corvette itself is not as special as the team that came together to develop all that stuff.
Sure.
Like what if Motorola had really put energy in behind that team and says, like, you know what, maybe we should keep some of this stuff on the back burner. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, what, can you imagine if, like, the Motorola Razr was a car instead of a phone?
I can't, but I like the idea.
Motorola Razr instead of a Polaris Razr? I'm there.
Right. Or
eight side-by-sides.
Or I think about, like, I think it was the year after the GM Impact concept broke down at the Arizona Solar and Electric 500, next year they set a world speed record for like fastest electric car. But I think about it and I'm like, you know, with the power that the Motorola team had put together with such a limited, like on a shoestring budget with no resources, like I don't think GM would have lost. I don't think they would have set that record.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know if you saw that other part when the Motorola EX12, which was their follow-up race car, they got invited to a Grand Prix in Cleveland, and there was a rumor that GM had paid the promoters like $50,000, something like that, not to race.
Yep.
I don't know if that's true, but it's plausible, you know.
I would say it's totally plausible. And to your point, yeah. How would the landscape be different if this technology, if their efforts had gone forward? Because, I mean, we had then the EV1, and then electrification kind of went away, say for like the Honda Insight and the Prius, and we're talking about hybrid.
Right.
And it kind of went away and it really didn't even come back into anybody's mind until...
Right.
Till gas prices went back up to like $4 a gallon towards the end of the aughts, and then it's all of a sudden, oh my god, we got to try to come up with something different. And then, you know, Tesla stepped in.
Yeah, not like I said, not even just like the full electrification. I don't know if you saw at the end of part two where I dropped the bomb that that same team was working on a hybrid 500 horsepower Mustang.
Mm.
And I'm just like, what if that would have happened?
If that would have happened in the late 90s, before hybrid became a dirty word for enthusiasts, that would have been freaking amazing.
It would have been different. Everything would have been totally different.
It would have changed everything, because you still have your engine. Ooh, but now we get an electric boost with 500 horse. I mean,
right.
When the Terminator Cobra came out in 2003 with 390, that was like, oh my gosh, this thing is amazing. So cool. It's like, yeah, okay. So here's, let's go 500 with a hybrid system before people associated hybrid, well, with the Prius.
With what it is now.
Which yeah. I was never on board the Prius hate train. I thought the tech was great. not every car has to be some cutting edge performance machine. I thoroughly enjoyed driving every Prius I've been in, and I've been in the first gens and the second gens, the third gens. The latest model looks fantastic.
It does.
But it kind of gave, it just put a bad taste in the mouths of enthusiasts. And if Motorola had come up with that first, completely different.
Yeah.
Completely different.
There's so many like bizarre world like what ifs for that project. It's just, I am glad that I was able to tell that story. Because
and you did a fantastic job at it.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Oh, you did. That's not like, me blowing smoke. You did a fantastic job.
As Group FBC said, I mean, it's great seeing somebody do genuine journalism. It's so refreshing to see. That's what it's about. Not just, hey, okay, here's a press release. Write it up. That's kind of what Bruce and I do. We try to have time.
We do other stuff. Let's not be totally against us.
Hey, I'm working on a really cool in-depth story on the Super Spin Car Wash from Matchbox from the 1980s. Well, that's going to be aces. No, it's not. It will be. It's me pulling old stuff out of storage. But yeah, finding these items, I mean, especially something one-off like this, something that at first you were like, oh, let's see the Motorola Corvette face.
Imagine what life would have been like if it would have said no, because I almost said no.
Yeah.
Because when the guy was dragging me out there, I'm like, I really don't want to see this, but okay.
Well, yeah, but how many times, you know, how many times have you had someone tell you a car story and you're like, this is a bunch of BS. This isn't real. Buh, 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 buh. And then, you know, one in a million, you got it. You found the diamond in the rough, the thing that no one even knew existed. And you got to do a multi-part story about it because it's so damn cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So honestly, I feel like I don't want to toot my own horn, but I feel like there's so much material there that it could be like a movie. There were so many things I had to like cut or just like, I can't. This is so cool, but I'm not sure how relevant this is to the story.
You know,
but
significant books have been written on less material.
Far less. Yeah.
I've talked to a lot of people that have done books, and each one has said, like, yeah, this cost me money. I didn't make any money from writing this book. But then they have like two or three books because it's,
yeah.
Hey, you want to make some money, but it's also the passion of telling the story. That's why I have like notes of the definitive guide of the Ford Taurus SHO.
Because you're going to write your show book someday. I'll write the foreword. And, it'll happen. And,
I mean, the story behind it is really neat, but okay. After that, it's all just nerd stuff that like me and five other people are going to be interested in, but I still want to write it. So it's always there on the back burner. But Kevin, thank you for putting this on the front burner, writing this story. Everybody that's listening, go over to the drive. We'll have a link on our YouTube description here where you can jump right over to read the story. We'll also have it for our post at motor1.com. It's up right now. Once we end the podcast here, I'll go back just to make sure it's there. Kevin, any closing words on this story? What surprised you the most, aside from finding the actual car? What aspect about this surprised you the most?
Kevin, do you have anything that you want to promote? Did you find another really cool car you want to tell us or tease us?
No, about? I don't. I'm actually trying to get caught up on the other stuff that I was doing before then. So I don't have anything to promote right now, unfortunately.
Okay.
But I think one of the things that surprised me is just how like passionate people were, you know? Because sometimes it can get like a little annoying with, you know, modern EVs. People kind of just say the same things, that they're not interesting or they're not passionate or nobody cares. That is crap. There are people out there who are really, really smart and are really, really interested in how these things work and how to make them better. And I think that's just seeing how people were passionate, even just like literally 30 years later, and just so willing and ready to talk about this. It's just, it was unreal. Just like I remember talking to somebody, you could tell that they had a little bit of sadness in their voice, you know, when they talked about how the project was just unceremoniously canceled.
Yeah, I mean, when you put your heart and soul into it and you're really behind it, to just have the rug pulled off from underneath you from somebody just puts the cover over the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
It is.
That's tough in any field.
Yeah, and to be proved completely right, like, come on. Nobody's ever going to buy a hybrid or electric car.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's
especially at that point. Like you said, they were 3-4 years off from the Prius coming out and the Insight, what, a year, 6 months after that? Like,
right. I'm like, come on.
So close.
I mean, wasn't it like Blockbuster that was like, they had the opportunity to buy Netflix and it's like,
no.
What,
no
this, one's gonna, this streaming yeah. stuff, nobody's going to do
Nobody's going to do that.
Yeah.
Like, and now, like, and then, like, the whole division ended up folding.
Yeah.
Yeah. But on the other side, where's the dude that was like, I'm putting all my money into Betamax? You know, you gotta balance it out. Kevin, hey, we're getting close to the end here. Thank you so much for taking some time out this evening to chat with
us. Super appreciate
story. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yep. Such a great story. Hopefully you can come back again.
And then definitely. Any social media, like, I know we let you promote any stories that you had coming up and you didn't have much, but any social media, do you want people to follow? Instagram?
Yeah, sure. Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram, whatever. Instagram and Twitter, I am Gaytona USA.
Very good.
Nice. Like Daytona with a G. So Gaytona USA.
Yep. Very nice. Cool.
Thank you so much for being here. What else we got, Bruce? I think
that's going to be the show for tonight. Yeah. As always, good afternoon, good evening, or I have to say this anymore, good morning, because we have Groupa FBC in Australia. Thank everybody for listening to the show. Thank everybody for deciding of all of the ways you could be spending your time. You decided to spend them with us. We appreciate that. We love that. We love cars. And Eric Nefron wants to hear about the Yamaha V6.
Don't get me started.
But yeah, thank you, everybody. Thank you for everyone who's listening. We love your emails. Ted Adam Green, thank you for sending that email. Anyone else out there, podcast@motorone.com. We like emails. We love your comments. We love showing them on the show, but emails are fun too. With that, I think that's going to be the show for tonight. So thanks everyone. And bye-bye.
Awesome. See ya. Bye-bye. See you guys.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.